So for a story about Jesus, our reading from the Gospel according to Luke today has a Jesus who doesn't really say much. Even though he's the focus of the story, Jesus says just one line while everyone else talks around him. And this split, where the main actor does only a little while everyone else says a lot, reminded me of something I saw Thursday night. I came home from our year with the Bible study, put one of my kids to bed, and turned on ESPN to watch a lot of talking, a lot of commentary, a lot of buzzing around some athletes who were only saying a few words. I'm, of course, talking about the Scripps National Spelling Bee. By the time I turned on the competition, we were already down to the top 10. Each kid would come up to the mic to spell one word, and it was usually a word I never heard of before. Each competitor was allowed to ask a few questions to help figure out the words, like where the word came from and what it means. And while they figured out how to spell the word, two commentators, a slew of sideline reporters, and camera shots of family members in the audience would fill the screen and cover up any opportunity for silence. The kids weren't saying much, but everyone around them was. Now, it didn't take long until only two spellers remained. Now, in these championship rounds, they have 25 chances to battle it out and see who's the best speller of 2016. So the spelling bee opened up their secret vault of super-duper hard words. The commentator speculated on what it would take for each of them to win, and I'll admit, I was excited. I was into it because the kids were fantastic. One was 11 years old, a fifth grader, who's never been to the National Spelling Bee before. The other was an eighth grader and a sibling of one of last year's champions. It was a classic rookie versus dynasty matchup. With lightning speed, they spelled what needed to be spelled. The 11-year-old had two opportunities to win the whole thing, but he tripped up on his follow-up words. As the rounds kept going, the commentators and crowd got more and more excited. By the time we were at round 15, everyone knew that both of these kids deserved to win. They both deserved to be champions. And it's that idea of being worthy, of who is worth having something happen to them. That question is in our gospel reading from Luke today. A Roman centurion, wealthy and powerful, a member of the army occupying Jesus' hometown. He has a slave who is ill. He hears stories that Jesus has the power to heal. The centurion doesn't know Jesus. He hasn't seen him in action, and he's not part of Jesus' team. But he reaches out for help anyways. So how does someone reach out in Jesus' time? There's no email or cell phones or text messaging. So the only way to connect with a person is to send someone to find them. This centurion, he's an officer who commanded over 200 men. He has soldiers and underlings he could send. But he knows that when it comes to splitting the world into Jewish and Gentile, he's not in the Jewish side. The centurion has no reason to believe that Jesus, at this early point in his ministry, would even listen to a Gentile. So the centurion uses Jewish elders to find Jesus and summon him to his household. Now we hear in the text that the elders go because they're ordered to, but they also go out of respect to the centurion. They find Jesus, tell him the request, and say that this centurion, this outsider, this occupier, is worthy of a blessing because of the love he's shown the Jewish nation. He funded the building of a synagogue, creating a house of worship for God, even though we have no idea if the centurion even believed. We don't know if the centurion built this synagogue because of his faith, or maybe for another reason. In the Roman world, power was always centered on men, and you became powerful when more and more people depended on you. This dependency is less about being indispensable or about being generous in all that we do. It's about having so much authority and so much control that the very life of the people around you depends on you. The centurion is a slave owner with complete control over his slave. His soldiers are dependent on his leadership and his ability to command. The elders are dependent on their worship space because of what this centurion did as part of the army in control of God's promised land. So even if the centurion built the synagogue out of love, it's a love trapped in a system of dependency and control that is destructive and the opposite of what Jesus wants. Now, we don't know what Jesus says to the elders, but we know he goes with them. And as they near the house, the centurion sends another delegation to meet Jesus. And they bring this odd message for Jesus to stay away. The request at first sounds humble, but the grammar, especially in the Greek this text was first written in, shows that the centurion isn't asking Jesus to stay away. He's commanding him to. The centurion is an officer, so he commands. That's what he does. And he knows enough about Jesus' culture to know that if Jesus entered this Roman's house, he would lose the respect of others. So the centurion sends a word, tells Jesus, just speak, and my slave will be healed. And Jesus does speak. He says a word, but he says nothing about healing. In Matthew's version of this story, Jesus does say a word of healing, but in Luke's, he doesn't. In fact, Jesus doesn't really respond to the centurion's command to heal. Instead, he responds to the centurion's faith, a faith that says, Jesus will be Jesus. The centurion only knows his own culture, his own reality, and his place in his world. He knows the authority he's been given and how to wield it. And he lives in a system that says some folks have more value than others. He is who he is. And he trusts that Jesus can only be who Jesus is. Jesus will be Jesus, and in one way or another, he'll heal. So that trust that Jesus will be Jesus, that's what faith looks like to Luke. And this Jesus does unexpected things. He listens to a plea from an outsider and heals a slave who is at the bottom of life's totem pole. The walls we build to say who's on the inside and who is on the outside, to say who has value and who doesn't, are not walls Jesus is interested in keeping. The ones who are worthy of healing, worthy of hope, worthy of love, the ones who are worthy of Jesus are not always the ones we believe are worthy. Everyone is worthy because everyone needs healing. Everyone needs God's love. And everyone, especially those we push away for being different or who we see as outsiders, they truly are worth God's love. So in Thursday's night's spelling bee, everyone felt that these two kids were worth being co-champions. As each round passed by, the reporters and commentators kept repeating the phrase co-champions like some kind of mantra, and if they said it enough, it would actually happen. As each word got spelled and as the magic last round got near, the crowd kept inching out of their seats, and I'll admit, I stopped sitting on my couch. I was just too excited. I wanted them both to win. I wanted them to feel the joy, feel the excitement, feel the happiness, knowing that they are worth being number one. They worked so hard. They handled the pressure of the national spotlight so well. They were brilliant and deserved to be champions and treated as the champions they are. And it happened that in round 24, they both spelled the word right. They won. They were co-champions. And with our Jesus who treats an outsider like an insider, who loves a slave like they're a centurion, imagine for a moment what our lives, our neighborhood, our world would look like if we saw like Jesus sees, if we love like Jesus loves. If we saw the person next to us, the stranger outside these doors, and that outsider who we don't want to be on the inside with us, if we loved them as our co-champion in life, just because Jesus says we both are.